Accession number 27460, Wheel 6.
Can we just confirm the date of the course?
Yes.
Mr. Wilkes, Reel 6. Can we just confirm the date of the course?
Yes, it commenced on the 10th of February, 1940.
And as you just said, the unit had moved and you had to go down to Salisbury Plain.
Yes.
Whereabouts down there were you?
Bustard Camp.
Again, what was that like? What was your first impression?
Well, if you take 9 weeks on to 10th of February, you'll know it was still winter. It was bitterly cold to start with. We were under canvas, 10 of us to a bell tent. There were wooden boards inside the tent. We were on palliasses, and we were given an extra blanket. We had 5 blankets each. And on arrival, I just wondered where on earth we'd come to. We thought we'd come to the end of the world.
And this is out in the countryside, I presume?
Yes, on Salisbury Plain. It's just a bleak moor. We could hardly see. There was a mist. By the time we arrived there on the Monday night, it was getting turning dark. We were getting to that stage.
And conditions underfoot must have been getting worse all the time.
Well, it was frozen, but it was difficult to get a wash because the water kept freezing up in the ablutions. And we used to save a drop of tea to try and get a shave with.
And things were that bad?
Yes.
And were you there when the weather started to change and you had to go through the mud and the...
Well, we were still there. I don't know how long. I know that the next day after we arrived, I was allocated a gun tractor. And later on, I'm not sure if it was that day or the next day, I and a few others, we had to go down to Tidmouth, I think it is, and collect some guns straight off the railway. 4 guns. So we were getting our complement of new guns. Now, these guns were what were called 18-stroke 25-pounders. So they were a different gun. We'd left our other guns, or the guns that we'd had at Pickering had been moved over to York when the regiment had moved away. And both batteries got these 18-stroke 25-pounders.
Were they a bigger gun, a heavier gun?
They looked heavier, but they were still much the same.
And you said that was the nearest town Tidmouth to where you were?
I think so. And that's an army depot out on the...
So what were you doing? Was it similar to what you'd been doing at...
Once we got the guns, a full complement, we were getting more vehicles all the time, and we went on manoeuvres on Salisbury Plain there. It was tough going. And it was then that I really learnt a lesson, because for all I'd been told various things, one thing I hadn't learnt was to keep your thumb outside the steering wheel. And crossing a ditch, dragging the gun into action, we had to cross a ditch, and the wheel went from lock to lock, being a four-wheel drive, and it came round and knocked my thumb out of joint, and I still had to keep the gun, keep moving to get the gun into position. No sergeant ever wanted his gun to be the last one in. You always had to push on, and I was about fainting with the pain, but I managed to get the gun into position.
Can you describe this gun tractor to me?
Yes, it was what was called a Morris Quad. It was a permanent four-wheel drive, 5 gears, had a winch. The first gear was a super low gear for climbing hills. It was a 4-cylinder petrol engine. And looking back, they were quite a good plodder. Now, there were 2 odd ones amongst them. One guy quad for each battery. Why on earth they did that, I have no idea. Because I liked them, but I never got the chance to drive one pulling a gun.
Well, did it take quite a bit of strength to handle these vehicles?
Yes. We were young and we were strong. We didn't really notice it. But looking back, yes. But we managed.
And when you say you took the gun into position, obviously the site had been prepared for it. How were you... I mean, at what point did you have to, in a way, disengage the gun, or were you able actually to put it right in the spot?
Usually right onto the spot. The sergeant usually dismounted when we practically got onto the position, and he would guide you in, and you either came in action rear or action front or whatever, and you pulled the gun as near as you could to save the gunners having to do too much strenuous work pulling it round.
And when you disengaged the gun from the vehicle, that is, how far back from it were we supposed to go, you know, in an action situation?
The way we worked while we were down on Salisbury Plain, we only went back a couple of hundred yards or so. We unhitched, because you weren't just pulling the gun, you were pulling what was now the ammunition trailer. And so it was up to you to get them as near as you could to where they'd be wanted. Then they unhitched everything, gun, ammunition trailer, and you whizzed round or drove round, whatever, and drove away to the assembly point where there was a sergeant major calling, giving the signal to join him there.
Did you also have to carry the crew on the tractor?
Yes. Now then, these tractors, they had two seats at the front and they were wide apart because there were things including two ammunition boxes which held, I think it was 8 charges each. The size, the vehicle itself looked like a great big beetle. And there were doors around where you could put the shells in, and the charges went down there. Now then, the gun crew, or part of the gun crew, used to sit on 4 seats behind the driver and the sergeant. Now then, 3 of the gun crew would sit there because each gun tractor had 2 drivers. First and second driver, and the second driver had to sit with the gun crew while the sergeant sat in the front. Now then, each 2 guns shared another gun tractor where the rest of the crew went into, and that gun tractor pulled 2 ammunition trailers. So each gun had 2 ammunition trailers on site at one time.
And what number of shells would that mean each gun had available?
I think it was 32, but I can't just be sure, but I think that was the number.
And then we'd have to be replenished.
Oh, yes, yeah. That was what the ammunition trucks had to do. And the one that was pulling the 2 limbers, it would go back. Once it had dropped the 2 limbers, it would go back and take the limbers with it and stack them up again to bring them up forward.
So when you were on Salisbury Plain, are we around about the Dunkirk time?
Not yet, no. No.
You obviously, as we've already established at this point, you hadn't got involved in any gun training, so it may not be really fair to ask you know, what the training was on a gun.
No,
until we get to
that's right. Yeah. I couldn't do it because I wasn't trained for it. But we used to do all we could to help the gunners at any one time.
Again, coming back to the camp situation, you said you were in tents.
Yes.
In the middle of this winter, and obviously it was particularly unpleasant.
Yes.
Were you? I mean, this may sound a silly question, but how did you keep warm? I mean, other than having 5 blankets, of course, obviously, but during the course of the day, when in an open situation, in a particularly nasty winter?
Well, I can just remember being permanently cold. And we looked forward to our mug of tea morning and night, because we didn't get tea at lunchtime.
Where were you eating? Was it another tent?
Big Barkey, yes.
And was there a lot of snow at that time? I know we were more into the...
No, the snow had pretty well gone, but each night it used to sleet and it used to freeze under the tents. And when you opened the flap of the tent, it was like opening a creaking door. It used to crackle and bang.
And no heating in the tent?
Oh, no.
Other than your bodies, of course.
That's right.
And where did your equipment go? Did that go in the tent as well?
Oh, yes. It helped to make a headrest. It went under the end of the palliasse.
That's probably really that the ground must have become churned up as it...
It didn't, because it was so frozen.
It was always frozen, was it? Because mm-hmm. I was going to ask you whether you had to have the boards down, you know, to move around the camp. How long were you there?
Not very long. I can't remember exactly, but I know we did manoeuvres, and then our commanding officer said they were going to organise transport for all our private kit to be taken back to Bradford, to his mill, where our relatives could pick it up. And that was to get rid of all that. And we were getting praised up for being a good regiment. And then we moved from Salisbury Plain up to Halifax, where we got a 48-hour leave. And we'd just been there possibly a week in total. And it was coming up to the Whit weekend. Now, a lot of the three tonners, and by this time I was off the gun tractors, because they knew that if I had to relieve one of the sergeant majors who didn't like riding a motorbike on distances, I wouldn't be available to ride a bike for him. So I drove a three tonner, which didn't take the skill that a gun tractor required. So I was put onto a three tonner. And these vehicles had come with civilian-type wheels and tyres on. And so this Friday, preceding the Whit weekend, we were busy changing the rear-wheel tyres for track-grip tyres. And we suddenly... There seemed to be a bit of commotion, and they were shouting for different drivers. And it turned out that... they were wanting the advance party, our advance party, who were now going to be sent up to Leith. Now, the Germans had invaded Norway and the Scandinavian countries, and we weren't told officially, but we were thinking it would be coming to it, that we were going to Norway. So the advance party left on the Friday evening to set off for Leith. The rest of us, we finished doing what we had to with the tyres and that, and we all left on the Monday morning, early on, before breakfast. We were given a mug of tea, which was always referred to in the artillery as gunfire. We got our gunfire. And we drove up to Catterick Camp, where we pulled onto the parade ground, and there in the open was breakfast being served, and we just pulled on there and we were given a cooked breakfast before moving on. And we set off from Catterick, and we were coming up the A68, and of course we could only come up Clemmy Bank in Whittonley Weir at the speed the slowest wagon was climbing the bank. So I was at the back of the convoy driving an ammunition wagon, and I'm sitting looking at Whittonley Weir, and I said to the chap sitting beside me, we had plenty of time to feast our eyes on Whittonley Weir. What a beautiful looking little village. And I didn't know where it was, of course. I just... You know, you look at these things and imagine. And I said to him, I said, wouldn't that be a lovely place to retire? He says, retire? He says, you're not 21 yet, are you? I said, no. I said, but I still think it would be a nice place to retire. And so we left Whittonley Weir and carried on. And eventually the convoy stopped south of Galashiels. and were there for 2 or 3 hours parked on the roadside. We didn't know what was happening, but eventually we were taken into Galashiels ourselves, into what had been a woolen mill, and it had been hastily transferred into a sort of barracks, and we were able to go in there and were given bunk beds in there. That was where I heard of someone in our regiment getting word that his brother had been killed in France, a man called Drake. So, you know, we felt... Anyway, our job, once we were in Galashiels, was handling the evacuated soldiers from Narvik. So, getting them sent on leave and fitted out with uniforms again, because they were in a bit of a bad state. And
I was going to ask you, what condition were they in as they were coming into you?
Well, I didn't see them as they came in. I only saw them when we took them to the station. But I understand they were in a pretty bad... demoralised, I would say, an almost demoralised state.
And these were infantry soldiers, presumably?
I would think so, yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is round about April, aren't we?
That's right, yes.
And how long were you in Galashiels?
Not very long. After we'd handled these people, then... the battery moved out to Selkirk, and once we got to Selkirk we found more duties put upon us, and this was a bit stringent, because myself, being a dispatch rider, I used to qualify for duty dispatch rider, duty driver, then everyone had to do guard, everybody had to do fire picket, and everybody had to do a new duty, which was parachute duty. That was in case the Germans invaded with paratroops. Now, there were so many of us on that, it kept circulating very quickly round that you were on paratroop duty. It came round. I know I was 10 days and never got out of the camp, apart from when I was duty driver and duty dispatch rider.
Duty parachute, what did that entail?
Being ready to move at 20 minutes' notice to anywhere where paratroops might land.
And in your case, it would be driving...
Yes.
...people out to
that's right.
Wherever that was.
Yes.
So it would be pretty a hard day for you. Constant duties, in effect.
It was. And the guard duty, well, you were on guard patrolling the whole perimeter all the time.
Did these heavy duties, did they affect the spirit, morale of the unit at all?
Not that I was aware of. I didn't think so.
People were still up to it in the sense that they bore it well.
That's right.
And looking back on your unit, you know, over the months and the year, so was there a feeling of more cohesion, more spirit, more morale?
Yes.
Growing with it.
Yes. It was a compact unit, dedicated to duty.
And great pride in yourselves, no doubt.
Yes, very much so. Coupled with the fact that having got all the new vehicles and new equipment, new boots, new clothes and everything, we felt on top of the world. Now, whilst we're at Selkirk, three of us, off duty, we were off duty this particular night, and we decided we'd go up into the town and see a film. Now, you were only allowed to be at one of, I think, three places. One was the cinema, one was the canteen, and it was either one or two pubs that you could be in. So we went to the cinema, the film was a flop, we came out, but we couldn't bother. We said we'd go down to the canteen and have a cup of tea and a sandwich. And we just nicely got sat down to have our sandwich, when in burst the military police, pounced on us. What unit are you? And where have you been? We've been in here once. You're supposed to have gone back to your regiment. Well, we said we'd been at the cinema. Well, it's been flashed on the screen for you. Well, we hadn't seen it, because we must have left just before they flashed it on the screen. We had to report back to our regiment immediately. So we left, and when we got back to the regiment, my vehicle was backed up to the quartermaster's stores, and it was now being loaded up with camouflage nets. So the quartermaster said to me, we're moving out at first light in the morning. And I said, who? Everybody. He says, we're going to France. Now, Dunkirk was in the latter stages of its evacuation. He said, and the quartermaster, he said to me, he said, we're going to move from here down to Catterick. We'll stay at Catterick tomorrow night, Lutterworth the next night, and then Aldershot. And we've got to have our vehicles sparkling by we get there. So make sure your water cans are full so that you can get them well washed. He said, then on Saturday morning we're going to be inspected by His Majesty the King, and then we're going over to France. So we got down to Aldershot.
On those stages? Those stages?
Yes.
And keeping your vehicle clean all the way down? Or?
Well, trying to just keep the most of it, because it was quite dusty by now. Summer was on. So much dust settled on it every time, but we got down. So at Aldershot, when we got there, the first thing we were told, no inspection. And we had been told that previous to this that we'd have to run our vehicles low for fuel to go over to France, so there was a minimum petrol on. Now we were told we had to go into the depot and get filled up with petrol. Of course it was from pumps, so that was a lot easier than filling them with cans. And so we went down, and then bad luck struck. My clutch, there was a pong, and one of the fingers in the clutch broke. So on my return into the camp lines, I immediately went to our light aid detachment to inform them, and they said, well, there's nothing we can do in the time, which there could have been, but they didn't want to. Anyway, they got me another truck, and I always remember it had the blue shield and white cross on it. It was taken from a Scottish unit, and I think it'd be from the 6th Cameronians. So Saturday morning, this truck arrived, and I was told not to go to bed. I had to wait beside my truck and transfer everything when this truck did arrive, which it didn't do until about 6:30 the next morning. And then I had to transfer everything onto my truck, camouflage debts. So we would leave the camp and make our way down to Southampton. Now this had to be seen to be believed, because as we travelled, we were just moving a little bit at a time all the way along the road. The people, I can always seem to remember, these houses seemed to be set well back from the road, and they'd brought tables out onto the footpath. And as you came along, you stopped at one and someone would give you a cup of tea. And you move down a bit further, you get a scone or a bun or something like that. And then one lady, she'd commandeered one of the old Walls ice cream tricycles. And she'd sent the man to get some more ice cream, and she was giving everybody an ice cream sandwich. And that was how we got ourselves away down to Southampton. When we got down to Southampton, we went straight down onto the docks. Now, roll-on, roll-off ferries hadn't been invented at that stage. So we drove onto the dockside. And what they did, they put two nets down, and you had to drive onto these two nets. The front wheels on one, the rear wheels on the other. And by you got your bit of gear together and clambered out, the stevedores had hitched the ends of the nets onto one big hook. And the next you knew, you could see your vehicle getting swung up onto the ship. Now, my vehicle was loaded onto a ship called the City of Florence. And so it went on board. And I always remember I was standing in one of the warehouses after we'd been loaded, and an old soldier said to me, he says, and he was sitting on the floor, he said, "Never stand if you can sit. Never sit if you can lie." And he was sprawled with his kit under his head. And I thought it was always a bit of good advice. So we remained there till quite late. Then buses took us to a rest camp not far away. And we had to stay there till the next day.